Good morning. We are the education subcommittee for the full Ways and Means. We like to do our work, and today is April 29th, and I'm going to open a public hearing on 5016, and that is Oregon Department Education, the budget bill, and our topic is early learning. It's an important topic, and it seems like times maybe I'm sure Megan had shared with us when we made the transition from, you know, DHS to now hubs, but it seems like it was yesterday. So come on down. Good morning, Representative Huffman.
Good morning, co-chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee. Nice to be back with you here this morning. For the record, my name is Megan Irwin, and I am the acting early learning system director at the early learning division inside the Department of Education. And I'm back here today for my second day of three on early learning to talk to you about the programmatic investments that we're proposing as part of the governor's requested budget. So as you know, the division and the Department of Ed are charged with running programs that get children ready for school. And today, I'm going to talk to you about three of them that we proposed an increased investment for: the Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Fund, preschool, and home visiting services. And my colleague Sarah Drinkwater is here to talk about early intervention and early childhood special education, which is a critical support for children experiencing developmental delays or disabilities prior to school entry. So I'm going to start today with the Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Fund. And this committee has heard a lot this legislative session from both Rob Saxton and myself on the importance of connecting early childhood education to the early grades of elementary school. And this fund, the Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Fund, is currently the only investment that our state is making to that end. And while it's new, our data are showing us that we're getting actually really wonderful results from this program. I'm going to show you some of that in a minute. The early learning Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Fund is designed to improve children's readiness for school and to pilot scalable models for linking early learning and K-3 education. And so it's really focused on creating that seamless birth through grade 3 pathway for children and closing early opportunity gaps as a strategy for ensuring that children are reading on grade level by third grade. There are currently 16 Partnership and Innovation Fund projects. You can see where they are in the state listed on this slide. And they range in size and scope from a single rural school district to multi-county regional approaches that involve several school districts and community partners. In all, there are 125 elementary school communities in the state involved in this work, and these grants have impacted over 9,000 children to date.
Megan, how many total elementary schools do we have?
Representative Senator Monroe, members of the committee, that's a great question for Deputy Superintendent Saxton.
Good. He can do that while he's, yeah.
We'll answer that question by the end of the presentation.
Okay, that's only if Brian's available, right?
So I wanted
Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
On that previous slide, you list your partnerships, and you list several school districts as part of that partnership. How were those school districts selected, and why were they selected and not others?
Co-Chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee, the way that this fund was set up in statute required the Early Learning Council to go through a competitive request for proposal process. And so we put this project out to bid last summer, went through a selection process, these partners were chosen based on the criteria that I'm about to walk you through.
Mm-hmm. And okay. I think our Deputy Superintendent has a response for you, Megan.
665 elementary schools in the state.
So about one quarter, not quite. Yeah, almost a quarter. Thank you. I'm glad your calculator is working, Deputy Superintendent.
So to the question of what are these projects designed to do and how did we select them? The statute that set this fund up was pretty specific in how these funds were meant to be used for partnerships between early childhood and K-3. And the first criteria was around engaging families as partners. We are seeing great results for families who are participating in this program. You can see that families who are participating in the program feel just a lot more confident in their understanding around what it means to be ready for school and their ability to support their children. And we know that parent confidence in these areas is extremely important for supporting children to be successful once they start their formal schooling. The grant also requires partnerships between early childhood and K-3 practitioners. And so we have several of the projects that we're funding around the state that are focused on professional learning teams that consist of childcare providers, pre-K providers, Head Start, and K-3 teachers who are meeting on a regular basis to align their instructional approaches and create classroom environments that create a more seamless learning experience for children from early childhood and then from one grade to the next. The statute also required a focus on really supporting children through that transition from the end of preschool to the beginning of kindergarten. And we have several projects funded through this grant that are doing just that. In Roseburg and in McMinnville, the funds have been used to expand access to the Ready for K program, which engages families in children's learning and development as they prepare to transition into kindergarten. In Lane County, this fund has been used to support a program called Kids in Transition to School. Sometimes you'll hear it called KITS, which is a program that has a research-validated model for supporting the transition into kindergarten. And in Malheur and Baker counties, the ESD, childcare, and pre-K providers and families partnered to launch a homegrown kindergarten transition camp that served almost 100 children in its first year of existence. And preliminary data, which we're going to look at next, are showing that this investment is reducing risk factors exhibited by the children who participate. It's increasing parent knowledge and confidence in their ability to support their children to be ready for school. And it's increasing performance among the children who are participating in these programs on the measures that we look at on the kindergarten assessment compared to their peers.
And yes, Representative Huffman, and I have a question too. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm good. I just want to get on the record. Had some conversations so far this session, and I want to just get it on the record and encourage a slow approach. There's an effort to, as we're trying to push more educational opportunities to the pre-kindergarten, childhood, early learning stuff, there's an effort to increase the educational requirements of the preschool and child care workers and whatnot. And as a representative of rural and frontier Oregon, I just want to encourage a slow approach to that, at minimum a phase-in if we do it at all, or maybe even I talked to Mr. Saxton, and though he's not going to stay around and help me carry the water on this. Anyway, the possibility...
And you don't think you have friends?
I have to make new friends, apparently. You know, I had even talked to Rob about the possibility of looking at an associate's degree with a teaching certification for that preschool kind of area. I just want to review options because in Mitchell and Spray and even Fossil, you know, the big town, when you get to the big towns of Fossil, it's beyond challenging to get a baccalaureate teaching certificate to teach four-year-olds, you know. So I just wanted to get that on the record that please let's really think about this before we move into something.
Yes, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. He did cause me to have a conversation with myself that I needed to share. I agree with that completely, and also to extend it to the idea that there's an awful lot of this learning that can be done online, and especially some early childhood stuff, and there's some good programs. We need to be helped support some of that for those rural areas so that those people can get the conceptual understandings they need. They still need the practice and the other kinds of things, but there's a lot that's gone on in the last 15 or 20 years in early childhood and what kinds of best practices exist. And a lot of that information can be disseminated in ways different from having to go out of your community a long ways away and have all those other expenses. And I would hope we would continue. And I think the training that happens in Head Start has really been grown and is, I think, a really positive thing. We need to be able to capitalize on some people who are already doing it in rural areas. So I concur with what are going slow helps, and but that doesn't mean that they can't get the knowledge even if they haven't got the degree.
And the thought that I had, Megan, is that I think it's important, and what I'm seeing is that different hubs are doing different things, and when you I don't know, when you do a final evaluation of this year or how you work with Dr. Golden on that and Deputy Superintendent, it always kind of mystifies, well, not mystifies, what I'm always interested in were the strengths and then the weaknesses, like Representative Huffman shared, because as we move into the already thinking about the 2016 session, if there's something that we need to tweak or change a little bit, then we can. And it would be great when people bring, when they come up to share their different experiences, if they would kind of, yeah, if they think about what's gone really well, but boy, we blew it on this one. And I mean, it's just the first year. We don't expect perfection. We just want all those kids to read, but it comes in different ways. So, but thank you for listening. Oh, yes, Senator.
Is Roseburg and Fossil, they about the same size? I mean, they're both big in their districts, right?
One has a bay and one has a desert.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
For us.
Are we going to get into geography and geology?
Yeah. For us, frontier legislators, you know, we run into this all the time in the building, and even with my own bills, where I'm trying to cooperate with other folks in the building, the body cam bill right now, making it allowable for law enforcement to use body cameras.
This is education.
But it's the same. The effect of that on Wheeler County, you know, Portland Police Bureau can do certain things that the sheriff in Wheeler County can't. So that's why I'm always.
Well, you're thinking both sides.
Frontier perspective.
Yes.
We can't forget it.
And Megan, we're going to let you proceed so we can make it through our slides.
You didn't want to talk about body cams?
No, not today.
Co-chairs Compton Monroe and members of the committee, thank you for those comments. And I really do take the points that you're making, particularly about how we support our workforce, really seriously. One part of this grant that I think is so wonderful is that it has created a space for childcare providers, regardless of formal education level, to partner with folks that are running preschool programs like Head Start and people who are educators in the K-3 system and get professional development that meets them where they're at, regardless of education level. And I've received letters from rural childcare providers talking about that experience that could almost bring you to tears, because it's the first time that they have felt recognized as part of the profession. In a way that's been really meaningful for participants in the program. So thank you for those comments. We take them really seriously. I'm not going to spend a ton of time getting you lost in the data, but the point that I really wanted to make here is that in terms of impact for children in a very short amount of time, we are seeing that the programs that are funded by this particular investment really are making a difference. The kids who are participating in these programs are outpacing their peers in their districts and their peers around the state in terms of performance on the domains of school readiness that we measure on the kindergarten assessment. We are in the middle of a year-long evaluation of this program so that we can bring you these kinds of results and see what's working and what's not working. But what we're seeing is programs like the one in Roseburg really are working. The data on this slide shows you that children who participate in either one of these programs, Ready for Kindergarten or the district's district-run pre-K program, are outperforming their peers on the kindergarten assessment. And that effect is compounded for children who participate in both. So children who participate in preschool and then participate in a summer transition program do even better than kids that participate in preschool just alone.
Representative Huffman and then Representative Smith Warner.
Senator Rowland.
Well, and then Senator Rowland.
Thank you.
Just directing traffic.
Oh, you were just directing traffic. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a very quick question, Megan. Do you have any information about, I'm very struck by how, you know, there's these huge growths in the English letter identification, and the sound, but not much in math. Can any of that be accounted for by, are a lot of these kids ELL kids, or?
Co-Chairs Comp and Monroe, Representative Smith Warner, in Roseburg, I don't think that that's the demographic. So I will do some asking of these programs about why we might not be seeing that kind of movement in math. In this instance, I believe it's because they're just focusing so strongly on literacy.
My guess is just, you know, because you get kids around ABCs and that's, you sing them the song, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden their comprehension rate goes way up if they've never had it sung to them before, for example.
Thank you. Senator Rowland.
So the vertical axis, is that percentage who meet the entering standard, or what is the vertical axis on that? When we're saying 29.1, what?
That is co-chairs Comp and Monroe, Senator Rowland. It's really important when we're talking about the kindergarten assessment that we remember that there's no minimum standard to meet.
Right.
We're not trying to assess children in or out of kindergarten. That's the number of, letter sounds recognized, the number of English letter names recognized, and the number of early math operations performed. So it goes up to 35,
okay.
and then this is the raw score,
okay.
the raw number that the kids recognized.
On an average of all the kids.
So
an average kid who have gone through the program would be able to recognize of the 35, 29.1 of those things correctly.
Right. Yep.
Okay, that makes me feel much better. Thank you.
Right. Thank you for giving me the chance to say on the record we're not trying to assess children in or out of kindergarten. Just trying to understand what they know. And you can see here in Neocani a very similar program that's getting similar results. This slide is interesting to consider in the context of Representative Smith Warner's question about English language learners. This is a project in Forest Grove, and we see pretty dramatic results across the board, particularly in Spanish letter names. And the funds in this district are being used to build on programs such as the one bilingual pre-K that's at Echo Shaw to strengthen alignment of curriculum, instruction, and assessment across the pre-K through third grade spectrum and to engage families and community-based partners. And then you heard me talk yesterday about the project out in Eastern Oregon that was developed by the Hub and some of the results that it's getting. You can see here this summer transition program and the results that it's getting for its students, particularly exciting around English letter name recognition, and particularly exciting for the results that it's getting for its program participants who are Latino students. And just to note, this is in Malheur County, and in Malheur County, a majority of the children under 5 are now Latino. Very, really important that we're figuring out strategies to help them be ready for school. The final data sets I wanted to show you are from the Eugene and Cresswell school districts. These are children who participated in the Kids in Transition to School program. This program targets children who are living in poverty, children of color, and English language learners. This slide shows you letter name fluency at the start of the program and at the end of the program.
Senator Rowland.
If you go back two slides, I think it's something that I know we found that's surprising. Was surprising to me, and that is that these are a lot of your Hispanic kids, but they recognize English names more than they recognize Spanish names. Though they may be speaking Spanish, the formal education of the Spanish, and we find that even in high school kids, once they know their own language, it's much easier to teach them your language. When they really don't have either, it actually is more difficult sometimes because they go home and they speak Spanish, they come to school and we try to do English, and neither one of them do they really have the underlying basic knowledge, which is shocking. And the fact that they don't recognize the letters, which is amazing to me, even at that early age. So I just wanted to point that out because it makes a different kind of problem. That
And again, just to show, this shows self-regulation at the beginning of the kids in transition to school program and at the end of it. This one was letter sound fluency. This one is self-regulation at the beginning of the program for the at-risk kids participating and at the end. This is a really significant jump, and a really important component of school readiness is that approaches to learning self-regulation piece, and so this slide is especially exciting to me personally.
Could you define us a little bit more what self-regulation is?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so ability to interact in a positive way with peers, to follow instructions from an adult, to sit in circle time, the kinds of skills that we need kids to come into kindergarten to do so that they can begin to focus on their academic learning.
I thought that might be what you were thinking, but I didn't know for sure. I think my four daughters would have failed.
So clearly the point I'm trying to make here is that this is a program that's worth investing in. We did all of this year by taking $4 million that existed in the former Commission on Children and Families, and we got the results that I've just showed you. And as I said, we're about halfway through a one-year evaluation of the impact of that initial investment. We are asking for $5 million new dollars above current service level for this program. That basically keeps it at current service level for the course of a full biennium and adds $1 million for us to add a couple of additional projects in parts of the state that are not currently served. Moving on from Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Fund, I want to spend a little bit of time talking up to you about preschool. So the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program currently serves 13,762 children. That includes federal funding, because the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program in our state works side by side with the federal Head Start program. And so we're serving about 62% of the eligible population.
Senator Roblin?
So 62% of the eligible population has to do with federal eligibility for those programs. Do we know what percentage of the total population of preschools that we are actually working with?
Co-chairs Compton, Monroe, Senator Roblin, when we ran those numbers during round one of this committee, it was 12.4%.
Okay, so we still got 88% or so of kids, which we don't know whether they're getting any program or not.
Correct. We have a ways to go. So, like I said, we're serving about 62% of the eligible population. You can see the eligibility criteria here on the screen. There are currently 2,680 children on the waiting list for the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program, and this program is funded at about $127 million for the biennium. Just to give you a sense of what investment in preschool in our state has looked like over the course of the past several years, this is what the investment level for preschool has looked like. Oregon has made significant investments in this program over the last decade, which I think is a wonderful acknowledgement of the importance of preschool.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Megan, speaking of of funding, how much does an OPK teacher instructor make? What kind of annual earnings salary?
Co-chairs Compton, Monroe, Representative Huffman, that really varies by area of the state that they're working in and how much the program has chosen to pay them. We could get some information for you on average salary, but it's not very much. In your area, I think it's around $14 an hour.
On the high side, probably.
Yeah. We'll get the average. We'll try to get the average salary of a preschool teacher in Oregon, and I can bring that back tomorrow to share with you.
Let's follow up.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. That would be great because I'm tying it back to the other. If a lot of rural Oregon teachers are at $12 an hour, which I think they are, requiring a baccalaureate degree, we've got to make some sense there.
So this biennium, we are requesting about $30 million, $29.8 million to expand preschool in a mixed delivery model. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what that means. A third of this funding would go to the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program's base budget, which would allow them to expand services to 22% of the kids on their waiting list. And the remaining amount would go toward expanding preschool into a variety of new settings, including the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program, childcare, community-based organizations, and elementary schools. This is a policy bill that went through the policy committees, and now your job is to consider how much you want to invest in this model. This is more than just a great new idea that we came up with. This is something that we really know works. High-quality preschool programs we know can cut the achievement gap, and they put children on a trajectory to read proficiently at third grade. And I know I'm preaching to the choir on this committee a little bit on this, but I just have to say that long-term studies have tracked underserved children who attend preschool and have shown that not only do they do better in school, but they're more likely to avoid contact with the criminal justice system. So as you consider what to invest in this particular item that we're requesting, just keep in mind that this proposal would cost the state about $8,500 per child, and by contrast, 1 year in the Oregon Youth Authority costs the state $79,000. If passed, or if funded, this bill would make preschool available to an additional 1,500 eligible children, bringing the total number of children served by just state-funded slots in Oregon up to 8,790. And to me, that in and of itself is something worth being excited about. That's 1,500 more children who are ready for school with their social and emotional needs met and on track for reading and success later in their academic life. But on top of that, this bill is an important investment in the state's efforts to build an early learning system. And so there are some key features of the bill that I wanted to point out. It expands eligibility for state-funded preschool from 100% of the federal poverty level to 200%. So it's really an investment in working poor families in our state. It builds on our state's existing community capacity by allowing us to fund preschool slots in high-quality childcare facilities, existing pre-K programs, community-based programs, and elementary schools. And we know that there is pent-up demand for this approach in our state. There are many culturally specific community-based organizations that have developed preschool programs that would benefit from an investment like this. And we know from a survey that ODE did in December that there are currently 55 school districts that are beginning to operate preschool programs and would benefit from both an investment in the programs and the guidance that the policy bill that attaches to this investment provides around what high-quality preschool programming looks like. The hubs will play a role in this preschool model. They'll work with their communities to really make sure that we develop a mixed delivery system where there are slots going to each type of setting. The other thing that gets me excited from a policy perspective about having a mixed delivery system is that it will allow us to create mixed income classrooms where eligible children, so low-income children, and children with high needs are learning side by side with children from more affluent backgrounds. And there's really pretty substantial research that shows that that has a wonderful impact on outcomes for all children. We anticipate a ramp-up time of about a year, with funding going immediately into Oregon pre-kindergarten slots in the upcoming school year, and then mixed delivery services beginning in the 16-17 school year. That's just more on the funding. And then these next couple of slides just show you some data on the impact of our current preschool
program. Senator Roblin?
On your mixed delivery systems, when you're talking about that, is there a percentage of each category that's important in that mix to make it work? Because I would say some of our communities, it'll be hard to find that mix because we can't find it in our own elementary schools at unless it's 3 or 4% of the medium income or higher.
Yes, Co-Chairs Compton Monroe, Senator Roblin, I think you're referring to mixed income.
Incomes, yeah.
Sure, yes. I mean, poverty is such a pressing issue in our state. There are some parts of our state where there really are not people living above 200% of the federal poverty level. But in communities where there are, there's really just great evidence that it's good for all kids.
Yeah, no, we know it's good for all kids. It's just hard to find sometimes, which makes it difficult to have that mix. So,
yes.
Well, and Megan, I'd like to interrupt just a minute because I have a question that keeps roaming around in my head that maybe any of our senators could answer, and that is there was Senate bills out there about moving the funds back into schools rather than having hubs. Did any of those bills pass, or?
I know that the idea of if you offer a preschool at the school level, the money would probably flow through the school to get there, and to most of the outside of the school district, the money is still going to flow through ODE, I think, and I think there's that conversation. I don't know that any of them, I can't think of any that have actually passed from the perspective of doing that, because we need all of the resources. Every resource that's out there in a community to help with preschool, we need to be able to figure out how to help them, so I would hope it wasn't just...
Right, and the other thing, again, I know there's lots of research on this, that it doesn't benefit anyone if you're stopping and starting a new program when we're just in the beginning in the implementation stages. So, yeah,
that's
correct. I know implementation is hard, but it's worth it.
Very, very well said. Implementation is hard, but it is also worth it. So this just shows the impact on language development of our current OPK program. Wanted to be able to show you some results of what we're currently getting from that from our state's investment in preschool. And then this looks at the impact of the Oregon pre-kindergarten on social-emotional development. The final piece that I have before I pass it over to my colleague Sarah is just to talk to you a little bit about our proposed investment in home visiting. So we're moving now to the earlier side of early learning, from 3- and 4-year-olds to infants and toddlers. So as you know from round one of this presentation, the Early Learning Division also administers the Healthy Families Oregon program, which is a home visiting program for at-risk families with children from birth to 3 years of age. And Healthy Families Oregon is part of a national evidence-based Healthy Families America program that has demonstrated in Oregon and in states around the country to increase parenting skills and promote parenting practices that support school readiness, parent-child attachment, and reduce child maltreatment. This program exists statewide.
I have to go back a few slides. If you go back to the one that shows the language development, and yeah, that one. Is there another group that should be on there that's called Other? Because you have the entire program outperforming any of the subgroups, and it's difficult to get there if there isn't somebody else that's way up above. Because your first line is the entire program, and it's higher than the sum of any of the others. So there either has to be another Other group that really outperforms everybody, or I don't understand it. So just slide through it in.
Co-Chairs Compton Monroe, Senator Roblin, I see what you're saying. I will work with our research team to see if we can get the full demographic spread of data for you.
Okay, thank you.
So, home visiting program exists statewide. We're currently in the process of aligning service delivery boundaries for this program with to match our service delivery boundaries for our early learning hubs. In Healthy Families Oregon, we're currently serving 2,470 families. I mentioned this in the first round of this presentation, but in 2013, the legislature expanded our ability to serve families from only being allowed previously to serve first births to being allowed to serve subsequent births. So a mother who went through the program with her first baby can go through it with her second or her third. But we did not increase any funding for the program. And there were over 1,100 families who were screened, determined eligible, wanted the program, but we just didn't have a slot to support them with. So we're requesting $10 million in the governor's proposed budget that would help address that gap, let us serve the number of unserved families who wanted the program in this most recent biennium who we couldn't serve, and expand to that subsequent birth service. So with this $10 million, we would meet a significant need. And we have the capacity to do this. This is a program that's existed for the state in a long time. The service providers are ready to take that investment and make really good use of it. The program gets great results. This is truly an investment in prevention. Children who are served by this program are 2.5 times less likely to be maltreated than unserved children. And mothers who enroll prenatally are less likely to have low birth weight babies. Children who participate are more likely to receive their immunizations. So all of those great early indicators of child health and well-being and of maternal health and well-being are met by this program. And then in addition to that, it helps support parents learning how to interact with and bond with their children in a way that supports later academic learning. So we're getting great results from this program in Oregon. We have been for a long time. We have not increased our investment in it in several years, although we've expanded eligibility. And we believe, given Oregon's current child maltreatment numbers, I believe we're 13th in the nation for child abuse and neglect, and the clear demand that exists for this program, that this is a common sense and a really high impact investment that this committee could make. We pay about $4,600 per child for this program right now. You can contrast that with the $29,000 we pay per child per child welfare case. And you can see that this program, which is proven to reduce foster care placements, is not only an important investment in supporting kids to be ready for school and to supporting our goals around family stability, it's also just a really smart thing for the state to purchase.
Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Megan, are those biennial numbers?
This is how much co-chairs Comp and Monroe, Representative Hoffman, these are annual numbers, $4,600 per child per year.
Half of a college tuition, maybe.
Okay, so the final programmatic investment that we proposed in the governor's requested budget was an ask for $15 million new dollars to invest in early intervention and early childhood special education. This is an investment that I believe is critical for children who are experiencing delays or disabilities early in life. And my colleague Sarah Drinkwater is here to share more with you about this program. And I'm going to turn things over to her, and I will happily click your slides for you.
Megan, before you switch over, as you've talked about the governor's recommended budget and current service level issues, are we talking about Governor Kitzhaber or our new governor?
Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, Representative Comp, really good question to ask. We are talking about our current governor. She has expressed enthusiastic support for investing in early childhood education and supports the proposals that I just walked you through today.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Good morning, co-chairs Comp and Monroe and committee members. My name is Sarah Drinkwater, and I am the Assistant Superintendent, Office of Learning Student Services at the Oregon Department of Education, and I'm very happy to be here this morning to share with you about our early intervention, early childhood special education programs. That's a very long title, and so often you might hear it be referred to as EI-ECSE, so I may jump in between those two references. My first couple of slides that I have for you are a review about our early intervention, early childhood special education programs. And the first slide looks at the funding levels, current service levels in our early intervention, early childhood special ed programs. You can see the state fund, general fund number at $146.4 million. There are no other types of state funds that are added to that state fund. Federal funds come in at $28 million for a total of $174.4 million. Those are current service levels. The next slide shares with you some facts about our services. And both early intervention and early childhood special education are mandated programs. Early childhood special education is federally mandated, and early intervention is a state-mandated program. And local programs serve children and their families through 9 regional ESDs and school districts. And ODE administers kind of the contracts with the ESDs, monitors performance under those contracts, provides technical assistance, and collects data on performance indicators. The ages of students or children that are served, infants and toddlers, are 0 through 2 years of age, and then preschoolers are 3 through school age. And they have, as Megan mentioned, disabilities or developmental delays that have been documented through an eligibility and evaluation process. And the goal of these programs is to address those disabilities and delays and help prepare these young children to be ready for school age and be more successful as they progress through their educational career. It's interesting to note that the caseload has grown since the 1990s, and currently we're serving about an average of 11,108 children in 13-14. We don't have the final numbers for 14-15 just yet. And the per child annual allocation currently is $7,419, and that's only an increase of 5.3% in 10 years. This next slide is a pictorial of the caseload growth from 2010 to 2014, looking at April actuals. It's interesting to note caseloads have been over 10,000, and in 2014, as I just mentioned, 11,104. Another interesting fact that I took a look at is that Oregon has had a steady decline in birth rate since 2009. Kind of corresponding with the downturn in the economy in 2008. As an example, one large county, Marion County, experienced a decrease of 14.5% in birth rates from 2009 to 2013. However, right now in the information and data that we have from 2014 shows that preliminary state data says that there is beginning to be a little uptick in birth rate, approximately 1% from 2013 to 14. And Marion County, the example that I just gave you, is also experiencing an increase. So I thought it was just interesting to relate state information about birth rates. This next slide is a pictorial of the EIE CSE program funding history. And the I think it's a green or green bar on the bottom are state dollars from the general fund, and the pink part of the bar is federal dollars. There might be a question about what happened in 2009 and 11 with the pink bars, and that was the ARRA, A-R-R-A, or the Americans Reinvestment and Recovery Act funding. That was a one-time funding, and so you can see kind of the fluctuation in general fund and federal funds over since 2001. Again, we are at $174.4 million current service level. As Megan mentioned at the beginning, this is a request for $15 million to help support investments in early intervention, early childhood special education. And we would be looking at supporting 3 different areas: program improvement, program growth, and program enhancement. If I go back to program improvement, we would be looking at increasing services. The funding has not kept pace with the cost of services over the last 10 years. In addition, we would continue to collaborate and implement with our partners the statewide developmental screening that was started in 2014. What we would be looking at specifically related to increase in service levels, it may be that more families in early intervention could receive a once-a-week service, which is deemed an adequate level of support. A preschooler may be able to attend another day per week, go from 2 days a week to 3 days a week, or participate in 1 day a week of preschool and not just a monthly consultation with their family. Related to program growth, we would be looking at supporting increased in numbers of children needing service, and looking at probably supporting an additional 148 students. We anticipate program growth due to the more robust implementation statewide of the developmental screener and then would be able to encompass those children into our services. Program enhancement would focus on teaching of social-emotional and approaches to learning skills. Megan very wonderfully described what those were, and we want to support those same kinds of skills in preschoolers as they prepare and get ready for kindergarten. As Megan did mention, those skills sometimes are often the most critical in being able to access learning. If you're able to follow a direction, sit in a circle and attend and take care of some of your own sort of needs throughout the day.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sarah, how does this $15 million and then the overall state funding in the governor's recommended budget compare to what the regional superintendents are saying that they need to meet the current demand?
Co-chairs Monroe and Comp and Representative Huffman, I actually don't know the answer to how those tie together related to the $15 million and what superintendents from school districts or ESDs are saying, and I would have to take a look at that and find out if that's similar or not. We know that the pace of the funding of this program and just cost of living increases over the years. I have another slide coming that talks about the per cost or per allocation, annual allocation for a student in 2003-2005 was only $7,049, and currently 10 years later at $7,419, with the cost of teachers' salaries increasing over $20,000 per year.
Yes, sir.
Another question.
Yeah, Paul.
Doug, how does the governor's recommended budget compare with the co-chair's? Was this spelled out in the framework, or is this something that's not quite clear?
The co-chair's budget assumed the current service level, so did not include the $15 million, both in the former governor's and sort of the desire of the current governor. So there's growth in the current service level because it is a mandated caseload program, but there's no new funds infusion.
So
yes, follow.
Would the $15 million come out of the 60?
If, yeah.
Why do you have to get us depressed?
I'm just asking.
Okay. Senator Roland.
Yeah, so it was striking to me that you said that the birth rates have gone down, caseload goes up. Is that because we haven't been meeting the need that was already there, or is there more people being identified, or, you know, are there more people moving into the state than moving out? How do we have the opposite effect with respect to that?
Co-chairs Monroe and Comp and Senator Roblin, all of those, I mean, what you have just shared, all of that is part of it. We don't currently serve the estimated eligibility of young children and families currently. With the implementation 2014 of the statewide screening assessment, we are seeing an uptick there that we are reaching, finding, and making eligible students who need those services. And that will continue to grow with full implementation of that. And I have a slide that's coming that looks at those estimates.
Okay. And
follow up.
And although these are mandated programs, the mandate is that we don't serve less than we did before, not that we serve all. Is that correct?
Co-chairs Monroe and Comp and Senator Roblin, I think what you're speaking about is the maintenance of effort,
right,
is referring to funding amounts, not the number, necessarily the number of students.
Okay,
it looks
right
at the maintaining effort through looking through the eyes of funding.
So the mandate is that we have a program, not that we serve everybody that needs the program? Because it says they're mandated programs. I'm just trying to figure out, what is the mandate?
Well, IDEA federal mandate, one is child find, to go out and find all of the children. And then as a part of that, find all the children, evaluate, determine who is eligible. And then once you are beginning to serve, that you maintain effort year after year after year.
Okay, that's...
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Comp. So regarding, my understanding is that the poverty level is increasing in Oregon. Do you know, is that maybe one of the reasons why that the need is increasing, even though the birth rate is going down, that the poverty rate is increasing? Is that something?
Co-chairs Monroe and Comp and Representative Taylor, certainly poverty levels have an impact on the development of a child in utero and as they grow. And because we have not been serving all of the children who might be eligible, I mean, trying to do child find, and that was one of the reasons that the statewide developmental screening was started. And so we are, one, since 2013, seeing an uptick in birth rate again since sort of the downturn in 2008, 9, 10. In addition, with the implementation of the developmental screener, also finding additional families and children who need our services. So it's kind of a combination of those.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, just so that you understand or share with you sort of the division of the $15 million, how we're looking at program improvement, growth, and enhancement, we would be looking at using about $5.5 million in the program improvement area, $1.2 million in the program growth, and then about $0.5 million in the program enhancement related to social skills and approaches to learning. So here is a slide that talks about funding. I mentioned some of this information as I was answering some of your questions. And not surprisingly, the greatest cost for the program is personnel, and funding has not kept pace with personnel compensation. And if I compare the 2003-2005 annual per child allocation in 2003-05, it was $7,048, and in 13-15, $7,419. That's only an increase of $371. If you then look at teacher salaries in 2003-2005, it was a little bit over $66,500 per year for a teacher's salary, and currently it's $88,800. Just to sort of put a reference to preschool teachers who are early childhood special education teachers, there's a difference in certification and requirements for that kind of training, different from preschool teachers who are working in OPK programs or other preschool programs. I know there was an earlier question about salaries that teachers are paying. So salaries of teachers increased over 33% when the funding has only increased 5.3% in that same time frame. This slide gets to trying to estimate what the growth in our early intervention and early childhood special education programs might be with full implementation of a statewide developmental screener. And so across the mid boxes, the mid band where it says 2012 actual, in early childhood, 2.79% being served, and then the anticipated percentage of students we should find and serve with the implementation of a statewide developmental screener is 7% of that population. And then the population of age 3 to kindergarten would be somewhere in the 7% to 9% range. And there are a couple of research articles that help states make this kind of estimation. And so there were two articles, one related to improving early detection systems that we used in coming up with these estimates, and then the prevalence of developmental delays and participation in early intervention services. So these weren't numbers that were just dreamed up, but we followed some research studies that look at estimating if you're implementing a developmental screener, if the state is doing that. And then finally, I wanted to tie this all in and share with you, as we're talking about the 3-to-3 literacy program, supporting preschoolers with and without disabilities, and getting ready for kindergarten, helping support them foundationally in their skills as they enter kindergarten in the early grades. The special education program, early intervention, early childhood special ed program have a state systemic improvement plan that we have to focus specifically on results of children. And so ours, what has been selected by stakeholders and others in the state follows along and dovetails nicely. We're wanting to focus on and increase the social emotional and approaches to learning skills of children with disabilities. And this flow chart just talks about our theory of action, that if we provide technical assistance for them to implement evidence-based programmings in this area, and they implement them with fidelity, that we would see greater skills in those areas with our children with disabilities.
Any questions?
Any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
So, Co-Chairs Comp and Monroe, that's what we had planned for today. It took a little bit less time than we thought, so I would defer to the will of the committee. I can start on the child care presentation and then finish it tomorrow, if you like. It's completely up to what you would like to do.
Senator Monroe, do you have a preference? Do you have a preference to start tomorrow's presentation?
No, go ahead. My ears aren't working.
Okay.
So you get to make the choice.
So I get to make the choice. My choice is that I always like to take a break, because if we don't get one now, we may not have one till 4 o'clock.
Yep.
And so, Megan, if it's all right with you, we'll do day three as originally presented. And unless anybody here has any other preferences.
Oh, I like the way you're thinking.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Representative Huffman.
This would give us all a break to go down and pick out a book.
I already did that.
Well, see, you're off the hook. Then you're ahead.
Fossil.
Oh, so there's books that we can sign up for, Senator Roblin?
And to send to your schools. It's a good idea. But there's also, I think, is it today that Bill Hall, one of my county commissioners, will be here to autograph his book about one of our past governors. So that's also available, and I encourage you to get a Bill Hall signature.
Thank you, and I'm glad you're helping support the cause.
Coast, and my coast, you know.
Okay. With that, I'm going to close the – Doug, anything?
Next week's schedule, or tomorrow – they will be back to talk about some child care funding issues and staffing issues. And then next week's schedule, no meeting on Monday. And then there'll be work sessions on the rest of the health licensing boards on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be other Department of Education presentations. One on assessments and the cost of assessments and staffing. And then the other day, it's sort of a hodgepodge of policy packages.
Get Monday off.
So
I'm beginning to like this committee.
Well, now if you could just find the tree that money grows on, would be happy.
He has a few on his farm.
Well, I know he's got lots of trees. He can look for one that grows
money.
Well,
this committee just needs to grow some pears, too.
Madam Chair.
Yes, just the last comment.
Question. Speaking of money trees, will there be a time soon that you're going to share with us how we're going to begin approaching this $60 million that seems to be extremely inadequate?
What I believe are, if you can call it a plan, but we're going to wait until we get the May forecast before we take a look at those figures. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, yes, because maybe money doesn't grow on pear trees, but we can see if the taxpayers of this state are going to help us out a little bit more.
You involved their kicker?
Just quit. As a process point, we're sort of waiting for the final figures on what the Governor Brown sort of preferences are in comparison to what the former governor's recommendations were. So we will be bringing that when that's totally finalized. And that will give you a good comparison of what their thoughts are.
And that shouldn't be too far down the line.
I'd hope not. We're waiting for, I think, Lindsay to meet with the governor and finalize that.
Right. Co-Chair Monroe.
Yeah. Hopefully by next week I'll be able to hear again. Meanwhile, May the 14th is a real important date.
Right,
until we know what the next forecast is, we won't be able to make final decisions on how much funding goes to, K-12, because they get 40% of whatever the additional is. But beyond that, community colleges, higher ed, and then all of these early childhood programs that will be funded through that famous $60 million, hopefully that'll grow, and we'll be able to do a little better Mr. Saxon seems to indicate that to really do what we need to do, we need at least $75 million there rather than the 60 that's been allocated. So, but those decisions are going to have to wait till May 14th. Yeah. In the meantime, they're going through the asks. You saw the numbers today, what the asks are, all of them very reasonable, badly needed. I anticipate that that's the next major step, and after May 14th is we'll get into negotiations. Representative Comp and I will be recommending, after consulting with all of you, recommending to the big co-chairs how much funding for this, this, and this, and then they'll decide if they agree with us or not, because of course they're building the total overall budget. We're just worrying about education, which is about half the total overall budget. Yeah. So that's kind of the process. And then, of course, there'll be a number of bills that have been that have to do with education that are in Ways and Means. And Representative Comp and I will be going through those bills with the big co-chairs and recommending which ones we want to work, which ones ought to come here and be funded. That'll be around the 1st of June or so that happens. But that's basically the process. So each one of you, if you have any great sparks of wisdom as we go through this process, we want this to be a committee process and committee decisions, because it'll be really important for this whole committee when we're recommending to the big co-chairs to get their okay on the things that we think are very important. And again, of course, we're working with the governor and the governor's staff on all of these decisions. You know, that's why Megan's here and so on. And those meetings will be ongoing. The governor's education person, Lindsay Kapp, we're meeting with. I think next Tuesday we're meeting with him again. So Representative Comp and I are working on these things all the time.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And did I close the public hearing?
Oh, you didn't.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5016. And committee, we are adjourned, and thank all of you for being here. All of you for being here.